Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottling, filling in for Colin Cowherd. John Middlecoff's going to join us half past the hour. Three and Out podcast. We'll get his sense of some of these opt-outs, what it means for the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. We might talk a little golf as well. Middlecoff loves to talk golf. In 1 hour, 1 hour from right now, what I believe everyone is missing about opting out in college sports. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is the Herd. So the Lakers lost again last night. Again. The Lakers lost again last night. And what's interesting to me, and here's the Lakers who were 2 of 19 from 3. Granted, LeBron James didn't play. Right? We understand that. LeBron James didn't play. They've already clinched the one seed. They are, in fact, playing for nothing. Nothing. But you combined that they were, 5 of 37 the night before and then 2 of 19 last night. They are on the worst five-game shooting stretch of any team in the NBA this season. And it's not really close. But here's what's maybe interesting about it. What's going to happen if the Lakers lose in the playoffs is what you've heard from Colin Cowherd. The team's just not that good. And that would be fair. And as far as shooting the basketball. And remember, this was not their plan A or even their plan B or probably their plan C. That's not it. Because their plan A was to have Darren Collison as their point guard. He chose to be and stay retired. Their plan B was to have Avery Bradley, and he's chosen to opt out of a chance of playing for a championship with LeBron James. Their plan C, I guess, was Rondo, who right now is recovering before he can try and be playoff Rondo 10 years after he was actually playoff Rondo. So we can blame the point guard position or the paucity of shooting on Rob Pelinka not putting enough shooters around him. On the other hand, the level of and quality of defense that they have is good enough, great enough, that they have the best record in the Western Conference in the NBA for the regular season. So what is it? Are the Lakers not any good and they can't shoot? Or are the Lakers really, really good and they can't shoot? And I would say it's probably more of the latter than the former. This was Frank Vogel, head coach of the Lakers, and the struggles with their shooting.
We just haven't had practice time. So, we got to continue to work through it. And again, we got a lot of guys going in and out. We're watching tape on it each day, trying to learn from the types of shots we're trying to create. I thought we took less bad shots from the perimeter tonight. And, that usually helps your percentages. It didn't tonight, but it did create more attacks to the basket, more free throw attempts, more points in the paint. So there's some positives there.
Yeah, we had more points in the paint. Okay. 2 of 19 from 3. 5 of 37 before. And just the basic math to it when you're going to play a team, like the Portland Trailblazers potentially in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And the Portland Trailblazers are a team where Damian Lillard hit 10 threes on his own last night. Now, yeah, you can live by it and die by it. You can become 2-3 point heavy, which is what's happened to the Houston Rockets over time, or you go back to the Dallas Maverick for previous years. And there is a certain grittiness to the ability to defend. The Lakers have been one of the elite defensive teams in the NBA throughout the season, and that's what allowed them to be successful. And generally, that is what determines whether or not you'll win a championship, right? Like, people do miss that, yes, the Golden State Warriors would hit you for three after three after three after three, but when they were truly a dominant team, they were a great, analytically speaking, a great defensive team, which this team can still be very good. But as much as we want to make it about the three-point shooting, can we make it about LeBron James? I like what's called, what I call, congruent argument. Right, which means if the argument is good for one thing, why isn't the argument good for something else? It's the if it's in fact the same argument. If you, like me, think LeBron James should be the league's MVP, not simply based upon his play, but his leadership and his ability to get other guys to play above their normal level, right? That is what true greatness does. Because if we look at it, and you know, Collins done it, you break down this roster, you're like, Danny Green's like a year or two over the hill. Kyle Kuzma's been lost this year. Lost. He's trying to make Anthony Davis into an alpha. That's really hard to do. We mentioned the turnstile that is the starting point guard spot. You have all these, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a guy that's always been a good player on a bad team and a bad player on a good team. That's really, if you look at his stats, anytime he put up numbers, his team was garbage. And so to get that team to be the one seed in the West, to play for a coach who he had no relationship with previously, then you have an assistant coach in Jason Kidd where people thought he would be out headhunting for the head coaching job. Like, you're in the West. The West isn't as tough as it's been because the Spurs aren't what they've been. There are no Golden State Warriors this year. Like, I think if we're honest, we would say the West is far more conquerable than it has been because, well, there aren't the Warriors. And there aren't the Spurs, really. So those are two of the dominant franchises over the last decade. And neither are truly competitive at the top of the West. It's a very different conference. But if you want to get down to it, I would say that because of last year at this time, Magic had announced his resignation. They searched for and got a head coach. So people were like, "Ooh, I don't know about that one," right? They had to trade everything in the kitchen sink to get Anthony Davis. Could you find? And they ended up getting the one seed. So I think that LeBron, who's not as athletically talented as he used to be at either end of the floor, but his leadership, getting others to rise their level, his ability to build up Anthony Davis's confidence, all of those things. Lead me to say that I think LeBron James is the MVP of the league. On the other hand, if he's responsible for when they play well, why is he not responsible for when they don't play well? Right? Whether it goes back to last year, because everybody said, well, last year when he was hurt, they fell apart. Yeah, well, they fell apart because he was disconnected from the team. He came in with a goblet of wine and buzzing around the team, which is a terrible look. And then when he came back with LeBron James in the lineup, they lost to the Memphises, the Phoenixes of the world, the teams that were trying to be bad, the Dallas Mavericks, and they still couldn't win those games when they mattered. If he's responsible for the winning, he has the same or similar level of responsibility for the losing. It doesn't work where, well, they only win because LeBron played well. When they play poorly, it has nothing to do with LeBron. In fact, statistically, this year, there is no greater correlation between winning and losing than how LeBron James plays. Look at his stats. It's like 27 a game and shooting, you know, 50 from two and 40 from three and in the 70s from the free throw line. Look at that. When they win, 7 points a game more. Like more than 10 percentage points better shooting three-point shots, more than 5 percentage points shooting better two-point field goal shots, and shooting far better from the free throw line as well. Here's Rick Bucher.
Anthony Davis, in L.A., his numbers are pretty indistinguishable between wins and losses. If you look at LeBron James, his numbers are starkly different between wins and losses, and not in terms of rebounds and assists and being a distributor. It's being a scorer. I think that the win over the Clippers was an aberration. LeBron James at 35 is going to have to be their closer, is going to have to be a scorer, and he's going to have to be one of their two best defenders.
Yes. I don't know if he'll have to be one of their two best defenders, but I do think that he's going to have to find a way to carry a team. To carry a team. Now, is it a perfect team? No. But I could make the same point about any of these teams in the West. Like, we make it out like LeBron James is going up against, is going against these perfect opponents. Right? Like, let's go through the other teams in the West. The LA Clippers, they got a great depth of talent. Hey, but Patrick Beverley, it might be their heart and soul, but truth is, he should be coming off the bench. Lou Williams does come off the bench. He only goes left. He's a scoring machine, but there are times in which he's ice cold. You know, he can be a little bit flaky as well. There's a reason he's always come off the bench on the good teams he's played with in the NBA. Kawhi's spectacular, but he's always banged up. Paul George has been up and down in the playoffs. They don't really have a starting, you know, center or power forward or anybody that Montrezl Harrell doesn't scare you. They're not a great rebounding team. Like, and the Clippers, by the way, have never been beyond the second round of the playoffs. It, Kawhi has, but no one else has. You know, I mean, Paul George a little bit when he was in Indy, but never had real postseason success. So we're comparing LeBron and the imaginary team he's supposed to be playing with as if he's playing against these all-time great teams when even the most talented competitor has a ton of flaws. And who else is there? Oklahoma City, who's a surprise. Dallas that plays no defense and isn't there yet. The Houston Rockets that can only play small ball. Russell Wilson, you know, can't shoot. They're playing him like a small ball center or power forward. You know, they have one trick. They're one trick pony. Let's play small, give it to James Harden and see what he can do. So I understand that you have the desire to freak out and blame the shooting. And on some level, that's a reasonable thing to blame it on. When you shoot so poorly that you have the worst five-game stretch of any team in the NBA, it's a notable flaw. But in spite of the paucity of quality shooters on that team, they still have the best record in the West. And they got there with defense, with leadership, with LeBron James, with Anthony Davis. And when they're good, it's when LeBron's good. And when they're bad, it's when LeBron's bad. And if you want the glory and the respect of LeBron carried them, then he's going to have to carry them. It's a congruent argument. Make sense? Your thoughts. At Gottlieb Show is the Twitter handle. At Gottlieb Show is the Twitter handle. Tom Brady is going to struggle in his first season with the Buccaneers. I heard Colin say the Super Bowl team, Super Bowl favorite or whatever. I think they got some struggle in him. He said so himself. I'll share it with you next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to hear some your music, not your roommate, Raycon's wireless earbuds are the way to go. Get 15% off your Raycon order at buyraycon.com/herd. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. So Tom Brady told Jenna Lane, who's a Buccaneers insider, quote, it's been different having the opportunity over this time to move and to, for example, study my playbook. I mean, I haven't really had to do that in 19 years. So you forget, man, that's really tough. Like all the different terminologies, you're going back a very long time in my career. You don't have to put the mental energy in like I did. I have to work at it pretty hard physically still. I put in a lot of time and energy into making sure I'm feeling good in order to perform at my best. But mentally, I think there's been that's been the thing that's obviously had its challenges. Huh. Well, Look, I don't hate to say I told you so. I actually love saying I told you so. I just do. I love saying I told you so. And I think Tom Brady being completely honest here is telling you just how hard it is to learn a different football terminology at this age. You know, inside your brain, there's this like space in your brain for language. And supposedly, if you can fill it up with different languages, by the time you're like 5 or 6, it's much easier throughout your life to speak multiple languages. And I know many like nanny nations, like, well, we had a Russian nanny, but my kid doesn't speak Russian because it's the development of a certain part of your brain. And sports is much the same way. It's much the same way. Like, you know, Alex Smith had, I think, 7 offensive coordinators in his first 7 years in the National Football League when he was up and down and all over the map when he was in San Francisco. But it gave him a chance to learn a ton of terminology. Maybe prepared him for the move to Kansas City and then the move ultimately to the Redskins. And now, if he can make this incredible comeback with a completely new regime with the Redskins. Tom Brady, it's been the same thing. What does that mean? Like, if you're a civilian at home, I'll give you a little sense. Okay. In basketball, the same thing exists, especially in college basketball, where certain types of screens, like there's a UCLA screen. Everybody calls it a UCLA screen. That's when you pass to the wing. There's a big guy at the elbow, and the guard cuts off of the big guy at the elbow to the strong side block. That's called a UCLA cut. Where does it come from? Well, UCLA's famous high post offense that John Wooden ran, that's how you started the offense, UCLA cut. If you start at one, if a score starts in one corner and you have two big guys up high and that score comes and while the point guard's dribbling, he comes between the point guard and the big guys and goes to the opposite side of the floor to catch it at the wing. That's called an Iverson cut. That's because that's how they'd run ISOs for Allen Iverson in Philadelphia. An Iverson cut. There are some things that are universal. The cover 2, the cover 3, cover 4. There are different sorts of ways in which you slide covered for your blocking schemes and so there are things that are universal, but there are unique things where when I played in college, if a team was in a box set and somebody set a diagonal screen, we called that a Bama. Why? Because somewhere along the lines, they must have played Alabama and that's what they ran. And so it became known as Alabama. And when you have to relearn these things, we call that Chicago. Why? We played Chicago once. It's confusing. I'll remember when I was... when I played professional basketball my first year, I played in Russia, Perm, Russia, Batum, Russia. And I actually had a Russian tutor, so I can speak, я говорю немного по-русски, I speak a little Russian. I understand a lot, but I speak a little bit, and it's still kind of, you know, it's probably uncomfortable if you're Russian to listen to me speak Russian. But I took a Russian tutor, and every Sunday I would go over to the tutor's house, and for the first hour, we would speak only Russian, and the second hour, we would speak only English because her and her family, had never been to America. They'd only learned English through, like, the King's English, like, learning through the book, so they didn't understand the nuances, especially of American English. But oftentimes, when I'd be speaking Russian or trying to find a word, sometimes it would come out in Spanish. Wait, did I just speak Spanish when I'm trying to speak Russian? And why is that? I grew up in Southern California, and the first foreign language I learned was Spanish. And it was, you're thinking in English, translating to Russian. Sometimes it comes out as Spanish. What does this matter with Tom Brady? Look, Tom Brady has learned one language, one football language, his entire career. And so you can study up as much as you want and they're going to have no preseason games. No preseason games. And so when you get to the line of scrimmage and you're yelling alert, 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 all of a sudden, instead of reverting back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers terminology, there's a very strong likelihood he reverts back to the Patriots terminology, because that's what you've always done. So I think the – look, can it work? Yeah, it could work. They got a ton of talent around him. And, I mean, look, can he figure it out? He's Tom Stinking Brady. Of course he can figure it out. But Tom Brady, the strength of Tom Brady at 43 years old is from the neck up, is that he's seen everything, can read everything, can pick you apart based upon your coverage, knows what you're doing, and knows where he should get with the football. But all of a sudden, that becomes marginalized on some level because he has to think, wait, what do we call this? And there's no way to replicate that other than game reps. And when you start the season in New Orleans, then you go to Denver, and then you go to Chicago. Regardless of whether or not you're going to have a crowd or not have a crowd, all three of those teams are going to get after you and going to give you different looks. And what language rolls around in your head? Let's get to Ryan Music and get some of the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Ryan.
Good to be with you here, my friend. Well, you were talking NFL, so why don't we start with some NFL, Doug? This just in, Cam Newton's first news Zoom news conference with the Patriots. He had some interesting things to say, so I'll share a couple of them with you here. Specifically, address how things ended in Carolina. He said, quote, "The fact that I can't see my kids on a regular basis, that's what makes me mad. I'm not going to dwell on the past. I'm a self-motivator. I wish the Panthers nothing but the best. I hope the feeling is mutual, and I'm moving on."
What about his kids? I don't understand that part.
I'm guessing his family must be established in Carolina and didn't make the move with him to New England. That's the only thing I can take from that there.
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. You know, Ron Rivera, his former head coach, traded for his backup. And he could have waited. And
is that not a good sign?
Not usually. And I understand they got to give Dwayne Haskins a chance to lose that job. You don't want Cam Newton looking over your shoulder. I don't think Cam Newton wanted that job specifically. But the fact that he didn't say, hey, you know, wait. Brandon Bean, who came from Carolina, they didn't bring him in as a backup. And look, Cam wanted to be a starter. Will Cam prove the world wrong? He would. One of his former teammates came out and said, hey, in New England, they're going to coach you. And he's been coddled a bunch in Carolina. There's some things working up against Cam. Now, he has multiple different quarterback languages. But between his health, his inability to be accurate, and the fact that Jared Stidham does have at least a little bit of a leg up because of his knowledge of the system, the idea that all of a sudden the Patriots, who have now suffered defection after defection from the good part of the team, the defense, and they're going to be successful. Yeah, I don't see that one happening. I think this season could go bad in a hurry.
Yeah, you had mentioned his health there. That's always been the big question about Cam Newton after what has been multiple shoulder surgeries and then the foot injury surgery that ended his career in Carolina. He said this about his health, quote, "As far as I feel right now, I feel amazing.
Amazing.
I feel great. I'm extremely optimistic about that." He went on to note that there is still even more time between now and the official start to the season for him to continue to feel better. And he also followed up, "At this particular time, I am a full go."
I'm a full go. He's opting in. All right, we'll see.
Yeah. Would have been interesting if he said, you know, the foot just still doesn't feel right.
I'm opting in.
Yeah. Doug, we'll finish up here with this. I don't know if you knew this. They've given out the NFL MVP for 2020 already. That's right, Doug. Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield is your 2020 NFL MVP. At least according to anyone who works for the Browns, that is. General manager Andrew Berry said this, quote, "Baker has been really outstanding this entire spring and summer. Level of engagement with the coaching staff, getting up to speed mentally with the system and his interaction with teammates. Doug, I got to say, I'm convinced. This is a new and improved Baker Mayfield." This also comes on the heels of all of the other reports we heard about he's just jumping in on Zoom meetings he doesn't even have to be on.
Yeah, he's just popping it up. I just, you know, this is like This is like the college football coach. We had the best. I mean, guys are unbelievable in the classroom, unbelievable in the weight room. Do I think they're going to build this team rightfully around not just Baker, but play action?
They should be much better, regardless.
They couldn't be worse.
Yeah.
They could not be worse coached. But, like, let's slow our roll.
I love the offseason praise, especially at least, like,
well, Colin has the Ravens going undefeated, so that's two losses for Cleveland.
Right, right.
That's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, Three and Out's the podcast. John Middlecoff is the host of the Three and Out podcast and the Herd Podcast Network. Let's start with the Browns. What do you think about what they've put around Baker and how they're going to play this season?
Yeah, I don't think you can ask for them to put anything more around the guy, right? I mean, you trade last year for Odell Beckham. I know Jarvis is hurt, but he's one of the best slot receivers in the league. You add a tight end this offseason. They're already a quarterback's best friend, who's a really good pass-catching tight end in Austin Hooper. You already have Njoku. You add offensive linemen, not just in the draft, but in free agency. You have a star back in Nick Chubb. And Kareem Hunt might be a bad guy, but he's a really good football player. So the lineup of talent around him is absolutely stacked. Now, Stefanski did a really good job last year with Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings, but it was his first time ever calling play, so it's not like he has a long resume. Also, it's a place kind of where coaches have gone to die. I mean, hell, Belichick once got fired from this organization. So it's a difficult place to win. I think there's an elephant in the room of negativity. You know, when things like the Chiefs lose a couple games, people don't freak out, or Seattle, or, you know, New England doesn't do it often, but they wouldn't, right? Or the Steelers. But with the Browns, it's, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. It's hard to shake that. And it'd be one thing if they had a quarterback who'd had some success, but they're banking on a guy, which I liked him a lot coming out, but it's been a roller coaster ride of a short NFL career, and I think that organization, it's tough to overcome that.
What organizations should really be interested in Antonio Brown?
I mean, I've told you this over and over. I'm not messing with him. I can't trust him, and he's one of the best football players I've ever seen. But it's clear, you know, Seattle has shown a propensity, even if you go back to Pete and USC and the type guys, like they don't care. I mean, if you're that good, they're going to be interested. And clearly the Ravens have people in that organization, player-wise, kind of beating the drum. You know, if Lamar was a 10-year guy and he was telling John Harbaugh and he'd won multiple MVPs and he'd won a Super Bowl, I think it'd pull a little more weight. But, you know, when you're a really young guy, regardless what you're saying, I don't know if they have to listen to you. And so it feels like Seattle. I saw someone wrote Green Bay. I'd be floored if Green Bay messed with them.
I would too. On the other hand, you know, they're the only, you know,
they need help. I mean, they need help. Makes sense.
Rashard, you know, who was it they signed? What's his name? Breland from. I'm sorry. Oh, I said Rashard. Devin Funchess from Carolina was there, like the one wide receiver they brought in,
and he opted out.
So now you have the kind of the same guys. You're like, look, Alan Lazard or Antonio Brown, like, this is this really a question? I guess the other
couldn't
part,
Devontae
though,
Adams just have like 500 catches, just throw to him every play.
Yes, but wouldn't this take pressure off of Devontae Adams? You know, and
for sure.
I mean, like, look, on paper it works. The question is not just, you know, can he not get in trouble and not be a knucklehead, and is he all in for winning for the team? But then you're going to develop and play eight games, then all of a sudden you're going to play completely differently and add a guy midseason. That one strikes me as weird.
Yeah, it's tough given his suspension situation. But the one thing with AB, for being a knucklehead and being a guy that's all over the place, no one has ever questioned. He's kind of like T.O. in this sense. Like, he's ready to go.
Yes.
Right? He's just a freak. He's a hard worker when it comes to working out. It's never one of those. Like, I think Josh Gordon sometimes, like, doesn't have his legs. You don't. AB's ready. It's just mentally, is he there?
What happens with Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, I mean, I don't understand. Like, bro, your market's your market. Like, these offers, there's not some crazy amount of money just waiting out there for you. And even teams that quote unquote, like, well, he's waiting for an injury. Well, that doesn't change their cap space. You know, just because so and so goes down, they don't all of a sudden have the ability to give him $20 million if they only have $7 million in cap space. So all the offers that he's received for the last 3 or 4 months, to me are like, they're not screwing with you. You know, they're not trying to lowball you. Like, that's the number they think you're worth. It'd be one thing, right, early in free agency, like that combine period up until the first couple days in free agency, there's a lot of back and forth trying to establish the market, get, you know, a couple extra million here, a couple extra million there. But at this point in time, like, they're not pulling any punches. I don't know if he's getting bad advice. I don't know him personally. If he thinks he – I've always heard this. You know, I think he looks at himself no different than Khalil Mack or the Bosa brother. Like, he views himself as one of the best player in the league. I don't know how he quite does that, given, you know, his production and his injury history. But that makes a complicated situation if the agent's coming back going like, hey, man, we got you a one-year $15 million deal. And he's like, no. I think it's moronic. It doesn't make any sense, especially the teams offering him are like, good. You know, it's like you can win there. Like, if Seattle wants you back for that price or Tennessee's interested, like, you should be interested too. Also, sometimes a one-year deal for a guy like you that clearly the market just happened and no one wanted to break the bank for you at a position where when they think you're good, look at how much money these guys are getting paid. So maybe it's a Jadeveon Clowney problem.
It absolutely is. And now he's chasing the market, right? Like, that's the real estate term. When you list your house for way too much.
And it's too late.
Right. And then everybody walks in, is like, man, I like this house. Why has it been on the market for 120 days? You know, and somebody killed here, right? Is it a terrible builder? You know, is there something when they do the inspection that I'm going to find out about it, right? Like, that's, and so you end up getting far less than you should have because you overvalued yourself to begin with. John Middlecoff joins us to Three and Outs the podcast.
And see, Doug, unlike houses, in the NFL, it's such like a gossip league. Like, people know all this guy's warts. Like, the league knows. I mean, yeah. It's just he's been on multiple teams. Coaches talk. Like, they know his deal.
Okay, there's – I find the opt-outs to be fascinating. I guess my issue with the opt-outs is explain how guys are actually safer at home unless they're going to quarantine at home.
Well, I'd imagine they're not going to fully quarantine at home.
Correct.
It's
reasonable to think that over the next 6 months, guys that opt out aren't going to quarantine at home. Like, take Dante Hightower, right? I respect that he turned out $8 million. Like, that's a lot of money, okay?
Hell yeah.
$8 million for $350,000. Like, that's a bad trade. Wouldn't you just play? Like, if you want to spend $1 million protecting your family, testing yourself, you know, making sure that everybody is, like, I don't. But I just the idea of being safer at home, you're under a doctor's care, you're getting tested in the NFL daily, whereas when you're at home, you're still interacting with other people in a less controlled environment, and you don't have all those safe. I don't understand the opting out.
Well, I'd say neither do the players in the league. Like, we just saw it. He's by far the most famous player and definitely left the most money on the table. Like, the league spoke. No one else, you know, of any consequence opted out. You know, a lot of these guys opted out, and, you know, the media loves it because they were hoping all these guys would opt out. But the majority of them were on the roster bubbles. A lot of them weren't going to make the 53-man roster. Now, him, like, if there had been several players, let's just say 10, at, like, this $5 million-plus level, let's say eight, like, that would have been like, whoa, these guys. But he was the only one. And I've seen multiple players. Just like in my backyard, I saw Trent Williams just talk, Richard Sherman. Like, yeah, it never crossed my mind. So, I mean, it seems like the vast majority of players said, yeah, I was playing the whole time. Of course, because the nature of the sport, unlike basketball is unique because they're in the bubble, but baseball, for example, you're kind of on scholarship. Right. If you're an established player, you got guaranteed money. And if you're a young up-and-comer who's been in the league a couple years, it's like you know you're going to get paid in a couple years, and you're just so good that they don't cut you. In football – is much more like normal society. Even if you're good at your job, if you get to a point where you're making more than they think you should make, you just get relieved of your duties. So the nature of the sport, of the way you get cut and you're always fighting for your spot, like, I'd be scared. Dante, you know, we think, but he didn't play as well last year, that a guy, you come in and you skip a year and all of a sudden they draft, you know, a six-round pick who takes your spot, and then Belichick or whoever goes, God, this guy's already 80% of that guy, and he only cost me $750,000. See, right. Ya, you're cut.
Yeah. There's also the football mentality, which is you already put yourself in harm's way, right? In playing football itself is a dangerous and at times deadly business. So, you know, how much increased inherent risk is there? The difference is obviously bringing the risk home to your wife, kids, or whatever. But how much risk actually is there in comparison? So there's another part of the football mentality. Last thing, Tom Brady said, like, look, this is the first time in 19 years he can remember really having to look at and relearn his playbook. No preseason games. Probably none of the scrimmages, those controlled scrimmages that they've had previously. How difficult a transition do you think it is, considering he's always called one thing the same thing for the entirety of his career?
What I think the most difficult part is, if you would have had the offseason with all the wide receivers and the OTAs, they would have been working through it and writing the playbook. I'd imagine over the last 6 months, him and Arians nonstop talking, right? Zooms, phone calls, putting it together. But that changes as your offensive lineman, as your wide receiver, they start giving their opinions. They're like, I don't love this. I don't like, and they all kind of get on the same page. Well, that's exactly what they're doing right now, where you still would have made tweaks in training camp, but you would have had a large base put together during the OTAs, because then they would have gone to the summer training and they would have really worked it out and come back, met with the coaching staff, and made a bunch of tweaks. Well, they're kind of doing that on the fly. And football is the one sport where on offense, definitely more than defense, the reps and the timing, especially for a guy like Tom Brady, who hangs his hat on, if you don't get on his same page, he won't throw you the ball. Like that clip Tampa tweeted out on like day one of their like rookie OTAs when he was able to throw to him. He's like, if you don't get to four, I'm not throwing. And, you know, it's just the way Tom thinks. Well, with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, it's going to be difficult. I would say the first 4 weeks, it could be kind of ugly for them, you know, despite all the talent that they clearly have on offense. But Arians kind of fundamentally thinks different than Tom historically. So this is going to be a work in progress. If I told you he was 35 years old, I'd say, you know, this is going to be a little bit of a trial and error year. Next year is going to be their year. But when you're 43 years old, you don't really have that as a luxury, do you?
No, you don't. We got to go, but who'd you like in golf today?
I mean, Koepka feels like he's got his swag back, and this is his tournament. So I would not bet against my guy Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that place just looks long with a bunch of cypress trees and not a bunch else going on it. But
And when the wind kicks up and the fog can come at any moment, it can get cold and it can get hard.
Yeah. You playing this weekend?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to get out early tomorrow and then watch hopefully Tiger makes the cut, and I'll be able to watch tomorrow afternoon.
There you go. John Middlecoff, 3 and Outs, the podcast. Download it as soon as he hangs up. John, thanks so much for joining us.
See you, Doug.
Would it make sense for the Packers to sign Antonio Brown? There's a simple answer. I'll give it to you next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Older? Neither am I. If you're not ready to give up, you want to feel more energized and lean? Try M-Drive. Check it out at mdriveformen.com. mdriveformen.com. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. Good amount of things still time to get ready for. I saw this from Packers insider Rob Domofsky. This is from a longtime scout for an NFC team. They're back to square one. Same guys as last season. If I was them, I'd sign Antonio Brown. You just use him for 1 year. Let's say Aaron has 2 great years left. I've got to go for it. I kind of agree. I mean, that's honestly Seattle's thinking, not just with Jamal Adams, but probably with also going after Antonio Brown. I mean, look, the simple answer is, yeah, go for it. The difficult part to it is the culture of what you've done and how you've always done it. The pending civil stuff, which is out there, which could cause him to be suspended even more. The upsetting of the apple cart with Antonio Brown waiting in the wings to start playing week 9. Like, financially, it totally makes sense. Skill set wise, it totally makes sense. But it's all of the other stuff which leads you to pause and just go, I don't know. I'm going to take a breath here. But when you don't draft a wide receiver and people expected you to, when you're one free agent signing of a starting wide receiver, a guy who caught 60 balls in a season in the NFL, decides to opt out. When you're not in love with all of your wide receiving room outside of one clear star. The answer appears to be yes. If it is a no to the Green Bay Packers, it's not a no to Aaron Rodgers and finding him weapons. It's a no to Antonio Brown and all of the nonsense that comes with him. And can we stop with the Jordan Love stuff? I have friends who have radio shows on this network who are like, dude, they clearly don't want Aaron Rodgers. They want Jordan. Nobody thinks Jordan Love is the a year away from being a year away. He is a futures play. He is not a there. This is NBC buying the rights to Drew Brees in the future. And even when Drew Brees works for NBC, whether it's next year or the following year or whatever, it's not like he's doing Sunday Night Football. They already have Chris Collinsworth. You wait, you allow him to groom him, mature, call Notre Dame games, and eventually he's the heir apparent. That's what you're going to do. But you don't even have preseason games. No preseason games where he would have taken some snaps, none of these scrimmages, but no live football. If you're not going to see Jordan Love unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, God forbid, or they have a great season, he plays week 17. Otherwise, you'll only see him on the sidelines. So, yeah, I agree with the idea of Aaron Rodgers has at least two great years left, maybe a third. During that time, you're going to have to find a way to get him a running game, right? Like, they're a power running team. Look, the Patriots did that as well. The Patriots knew they had to run the football more with an older quarterback. Same thing happened with the Saints. Got to run the football. So that's what they're doing. On paper, you sign Antonio Brown. The problem is you don't know if he can get along with anybody. All right, coming up next, you are being lied to about college sports. Everybody hates being lied to. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you the absolute truth, though it may be hard to believe. That's next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.